What would save the world?
Veganism.
Gun control.
Ending capitalism.
Consensus.
More guns.
Nonviolent communication.
Energy.
Green energy.
Spirituality.
More regulation.
Emotional education.
End the war
libertarianism.
On drugs.
Socialism.
I'm Tuke Edelo, and this is
What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m.
Hello, everybody. Today we're going to be talking about Inauguration Day, Disrupt J20, the Women's March, which I barely attended because I was busy taking care of people and jail support. We're going to be talking a lot about this different stuff. So first of all, like, people get really mad when I say this, but I don't really care anymore. You're like, fuck white people. Fuck other white people. Fuck me. I suck. Like, fuck white America. White America is just, like, incredibly victim-blaming and incredibly unaware of what the fuck is going on. It's like, people are like, don't punch Richard Spencer, no violence. Like, remember when it was, like, totally fine to fucking, like, want to kill Nazis? Like, I have never felt more like Brad Pitt in Inglourious Bastards, being like, killing Nazis, killing Nazis. I wish I could kill a bunch of Nazis. I think that we should fucking kill Nazis. And I got people posting on my Facebook right now. I was like discussing nonviolent rhetoric and how it's bullshit for the next hour. Let me know if you want to Skype with me or something. And people are just like, so you're advocating violence, white men, by the way. So you want to build an inclusive society by advocating violence and destruction of property? Gotcha. Punching Nazis is okay if they're definitely a Nazi. Who decides that? Okay, if you want to talk about white nationalism and you want to talk about how in America, America is a white fucking country and how, like, white people built this country, when that is absolutely not true. Fucking white people went and got people. Well, first of all, white people fucking stole this country from Native Americans or the indigenous people, who we're still fucking with, by the way, because Donald fucking Trump just said he was approving Dakota Access Pipeline. So don't fucking tell me that I gotta wait to see what he does. In the first hour of office, he pulled all climate change funding and he fucking is gonna go through with the DLPL. So don't fucking tell me I'm not giving him a chance. He fucking had his chance. In the first couple of days, he fucking blew it, okay? He fucking blew it. He's a fucking fascist. And fucking Richard Spencer wants to stand around and talk about how white people fucking built this country when really we fucking went and we got people from other countries and made them build us for us and then treated them like shit. And if you want to tell me that Richard Spencer is not a fucking Nazi and not a fucking piece of shit person, go fuck yourself. Honestly, go fuck yourself. Who the fuck do you want to be in the history books, okay? Because when we look back, you're going to be the fucking white moderate and you're going to look like a motherfucker who went against MLK. And do you want to be that person when you're older? Do you want to be 65 and look back and realize you were the fucking shitty white moderate? Well, guess what? That's what's going to fucking happen, okay? Because, like, I can tell you that he's a Nazi. He is a Nazi because he's talking about how white people, how America is a white nation, when America is supposed to be a nation of many, many, many cultures. And America was barely built by white people. We fucking employed people of color for, like, almost no pay or no pay at all and fucking used force and violence to keep them under us. I just want to get rid of Richard Spencer. I just want Richard Spencer to not have any power at all. That's all I want. Okay? All right. We're going to fucking, you know, clear this up a little bit. We're gonna play some fucking Vermin Supreme yelling at riot cops, and I'm singing along with him. So this is just to cheer it up for a minute. Richard Spencer is a fucking Nazi, okay? Richard Spencer is a motherfucking Nazi. Kill fucking Nazis, okay? I'm not gonna fucking go kill Nazis, but fucking kill fucking Nazis, okay? You're either for us or against us right now, okay? Like, seriously, which side are you on, bitch?
Sauce!
Here's Vermin Supreme.
Hot dogs and applesauce!
So they're at least the hostages, but
play Call of Duty, hey! Hot dogs and applesauce!
And maybe we'll get married one day.
Let my people go!
Let my people go! Get your hooves off them, you stinky ponies! I usually don't use such harsh language, but in this case, I felt it was appropriate.
By the way, this is while we're standing in front of riot cops, while they're fucking holding a bunch of people and arresting them one by one. It's a giant mass arrest, and we're across the street trying to get them to release them.
Dogs and applesauce!
Hot dogs and applesauce!
Gonna vote for Berman next time around.
Hot dogs and applesauce.
And maybe we'll
get married
one day. And I see some smiles. We're all humans. But we're beautiful humans.
They might smile while they're hitting you, bro.
No.
Smile when you're hitting me,
hey!
Hot dogs and applesauce! What's that?
Hot dogs and applesauce!
Come on!
Hot dogs and applesauce!
Don't smile when you're hitting me,
hey! Hot dogs and applesauce! We'll get married one day!
Coming up next is Three Doors Down! They're
going to
be incredible. You're
going to
love Three Doors Down.
Three fucking doors down, huh?
You're
going to
love your new Tremendous Rock scene.
Tremendous. And finally, a cop laughed. You'll hear his name. Never forget his name.
Nigel Thornberry.
There was a cop that I saw calling it a
Nigel
cop
Thornberry.
Nigel, I was fucking with him.
Red Rover, Red Rover, send Officer Smith over.
Whoa.
Can you see any of their actual name tags?
What?
Can you read any of those name tags?
He was asking me what their name
is.
Officer Shaheen, he's the one who laughed.
Shaheen.
Red Rover, send Officer Shaheen over.
And that's
Buckvick.
Oh, we met last night.
Red Rover, send Officer Buckvick over.
I want you to buck all over me.
One of the cops looks like the dad from Roseanne.
Hot dogs and applesauce. Hot dogs and applesauce.
Come on.
Hot dogs and applesauce.
One of the cops looks like the dad from Roseanne.
Hot dogs and applesauce. We will get married one day.
That's okay.
That's okay.
And that's Officer Jen. Jen?
Do you
think it's a Jen or Chen?
Let's wake up again and just have a do-over, eh? Hot dogs.
Hi. How you doing?
Oh, he's filming too.
Oh, hey, how are you doing?
Hey, good to see you. The cops YouTube page.
All right. Tag me.
If you're filming us for the cop YouTube page, tag Vernon.
Be sure to tag me, okay?
You'll get 100 likes. If you tag Vernon on your cop video, you will get 100 likes and a couple of shares.
You like that, Shane? Oh, yeah, you cracked! You cracked! You smiled! He's smiling! Officer Shaheen is smiling! Officer Shaheen is smiling!
You're human!
Oh my god!
Yay! Join us! We'll hate each other!
Hot dogs and applesauce!
Because quite frankly, I'm sure many of you are just nice people. So
I hate when he does this,
honestly.
You don't
have honestly. To feel so scary.
Have you all slaves to capitalism?
This is why he doesn't want to hear me talk that much.
I don't know. Let me just say this. If for whatever reason, at whatever time, your CO orders you to make your moves, pull your punches, okay? You don't have to hit anybody. You have to crack no skulls. Just a little poke. Whatever, man. Come on. Let's be realistic about this mess, all right? Yeah.
Get the boob on there so you can jack off to it.
I'm flashing them, by the way. I flashed the right.
Yeah, I got body right in for you.
We can listen to Tori Amos. Who likes Tori Amos? Come on.
I like Tori Amos.
They're late for boys.
Oh my god.
All right, so that was Vermin Supreme, and that was us fucking with riot cops. I flashed the riot cops. My man, now I'm on there. My boobs are on their camera, and they totally are jacking off to it as we speak. Or maybe they don't like dumb hippies. Maybe they're not into punks. I have an amazing interview with a medic from down the protests and the inauguration day. So basically what happened is a bunch of people were in a protest, and then a bunch of people, in an action, a bunch of people got arrested, and it was honestly a lot of crap. So We're going to play their interview. Let me set this a lot, but there's a lot of little audio clips. Thank you so much for listening to What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn. If you like radio where I can say fuck Richard Spencer, fuck Nazis, hate Nazis, punch Nazis in the face, then you should donate to Radio Free Brooklyn. You should go to patreon.com/Radio Free Brooklyn. And here we go. Here is an interview with the medic. Here we go. So I'm here with a medic from the protests, and so you were telling me a little bit about what happened yesterday, and if you want to tell me anything, or talk to me about what this experience has been like for you.
Can you get like a little more specific with what you want to talk about? Because like a lot was happening yesterday.
Okay. So I want to hear from you what you were telling me. Okay, I'm gonna stop real quick.
So. Today, the Washington Post released an article talking about how the interim chief of police had made a statement that they did not deploy percussive or flashbangs or any kind of stun grenades, and that the protesters did that all on their own. And thankfully, the ending of that article, it said that the Washington Post had reporters had actually seen the police using them. But there's also a lot of video out there of it happening, and me, myself, I was actually in the middle of all of it, so I can absolutely say with 100% certainty that those devices were used at the time, and that no protester anywhere had devices that were like that, unless they're going to try and say that we were dropping them at our own feet. So that was that part of it. It was just the police trying to say that, oh, it was the protesters using stun grenades, which is just it's a ridiculous statement.
Yeah, and so you were an independent medic, like you're not...
Yeah, I'm unaffiliated. I operate unaffiliated. I'm an autonomous street medic. So,
what has that experience been like for you?
It's been a great experience for the past 5, 6, 7 years.
Oh wow!
I have a great time.
Have you been doing it since Occupy?
I've been doing it. Yep. So, I've been having a great time doing it. It gives me an opportunity to link up with other people, other like-minded individuals, and other organizations which I've wanted to be involved with. And it lets you network with groups that you would never have met under any other circumstances.
Do you think that people like you, like yourself, who have trained within activism as an independent, non-affiliated street medic, are they going to be useful now that the healthcare stuff is going to be a huge problem for a lot of people? Do you think that there's going to end up being collectives around that that help people who are not able to get medical care?
So I've been through a couple different groups in the region that I'm from. And we've been trying to kind of put some mutual aid organizations together, which are built around food security, poverty, and financial resources. We do have a healthcare component that we are trying to hammer out, some of the details of, so we can get either pro bono medical work done, pharmacy, therapy, crisis counselors. But I do think, at least in the activist community, it's going to start there and hopefully maybe spread out, depending on, because there's really no, depending on what happens, because there's no guarantee that Trump and his merry band of miscreants are going to do exactly what they say. So for all I know, they could, you know, give the finger to all the conservatives that voted for him and actually create single-payer system. Or,
well, he just signed a bunch of... pushbacks on Obamacare, like
yeah.
Today.
I know that they're going to pull the rug out from under the Affordable Care Act, and from what he says, he's going to create something that's better. Do I believe him? Absolutely not. But at the same time, like he might surprise me. But if he doesn't put something forward that's useful to the people, that's affordable, and helps everybody, like not just the average person that doesn't actually need healthcare, doesn't absolutely need emergent healthcare coverage, you're going to find more groups that are trying to create community solutions as opposed to relying on handouts from a government that's not going to hand them anything.
Mm-hmm. So without revealing your identity or anything like that, is there any way for people to look into these kinds of groups in a general thing, like on the internet or anything?
Get involved in your local activist community. I don't necessarily like Facebook because it's hit or miss.
Oh, they've been tracking my phone the whole... They've made me go through security checks twice in a day yesterday.
It's not just that. It's not secure for other reasons. You have other activists or other groups that like posting your personal information or finding out where you live and harassing like your job or harassing your family or friends. But it's not just that, though. It's just Facebook isn't a great isn't really a great platform to organize on, because there's a lot of details that you can't really promote.
Don't organize on Facebook.
There's a lot of things you can't really talk about. But also, just from an organizational standpoint, you can't really do face-to-face meetings where you're building those relationships and building like your organization from the ground up. You can't do it virtually. You need to have a
meeting space. It's also really toxic just for communication. You all right?
Yeah.
It's also really toxic for communication because I feel like without talking about a lot of these issues face-to-face, people just get like way... I don't know. I know I lose some of my ability of empathy on the internet.
Oh, I will totally openly admit that I'm a gigantic douchebag on the internet.
Yeah.
If you piss me off or say the wrong thing.
But a lot of those people, if in person we talked about it would be a very different conversation.
Yeah, but also again, like, I don't... For like smaller groups, when you get involved, yeah, the bigger the group, the more likely these people act like jerks to one another. For smaller groups, you don't get that as much. But again, like, it's harder to actually organize things in that space as opposed to meeting up, having a designated space. Like, for example, a lot of the IWWs, a lot of the socialist groups, they have a dedicated space that they lease or they rent or sometimes own from, and they have all their meetings there, and they create whatever. Agenda or whatever organizing needs to be done right there, for example, one of the ones that are made, they do a potluck every week. So if you're hungry and you need some, or you just need to get away out of a bad situation, whether it's at home or at work.
There's a way to do that,
and people just come in and provide food for one another. If you're looking to do that, just start organizing with one another or plugging into groups that are already there to build something more.
Because we're definitely going to have to build outside the system. And that's pretty much the only good thing about Trump winning. It's like when I first was hearing about punks for Trump, I was like, this is ridiculous. You guys, like, what the hell? But I'm...
Punks for Trump are people who believe that the system will fall under Trump and then we'll get to rebuild it.
I'm hoping that this does not die down.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that people start to realize they have to build outside the system.
Well, that's been a big failing. I don't like saying on the left, because the left is rather expansive.
Yeah.
I will say it's a big failing
on the moderate left.
And the moderate left, or the moderate liberal.
And
centrists. Because a lot of times, like, for example, this is great to have this gigantic march for equity and women's rights.
And autonomy.
But the energy afterwards, the energy always burns out afterwards, and nobody shows up to do anything later. So it's great to have these big marches and rallies, but there has to be actions to follow it, and there has to be energy.
It can't just be a march. We can't just be walking.
And one of the few reasons that I actually was like, all right, whatever, Trump. I didn't vote for Trump. But the only reason I was like, all right, whatever, Trump, was because I figured, like, you know what? Enough people are going to be so fucking pissed off and so mad, and he's such an idiot when he talks about things, like, about this, and his plans and ideas are going to make people so mad that they're going to want to be involved with things to fight back. So I'm hoping that people are going to get pushed further to the left, that people are going to be able to do more.
Woo! So. Somebody just got released from being held. Wait, do you have more to say?
If you want me to talk more, I can.
I just
feel weird with all the pauses and everything.
Oh, don't feel weird about that. Do you know, I'm saying it on here. Talk radio always sounds better on talk radio than you think. I'm like, and then it always sounds really clean and professional. And it's like, this is his voice. Even, like, it's like, I think that's why people get into this crazy conservative talk radio, because talk radio just sounds good. It just
makes
does.
Bad ideas sound good.
Yeah, it just sounds, talk radio just sounds good, because it's just a voice, and if they're talking into a microphone...
All right, enough about me talking about talk radio. Let's move on to the next part of his interview. Here we go.
I forgot where I was.
You were talking to me about a lot of the, how if you feel comfortable, the banks. And
so if you want, like, I tell people, I was like, you know what, if you want to go brick a bank, go brick a bank. I was like, go do that. Go take an action against an institution which causes homeless, which promotes poverty. Like, there's, like, for example, like, the maintenance fees, because you have a little bit less than $100 in your account, and suddenly now you're overdrawn, and now you have a $35 fee on top of everything else, so you're way overdrawn. You've got no money for the week.
The fact that money itself is just kind of oppressive.
Yeah, money itself, like any kind of capitalist thing where you require this item to support yourself, rather than just being able to, like, you know, just support yourself. That's an oppressive item. Or let me phrase that. It can be used in an oppressive manner. And frequently it is. Just historically, it always has been. So, I mean, people talk about ethical capitalism, and there never has been ethical capitalism.
Anarcho-capitalism, man. I'm a libertarian. Libertarian social gnome Chomsky.
I mean, like, people talk about, like, oh, the free market. The free market has never solved anything ever in history.
I hate hearing
not ever. So, but you talk about, like, okay, you want to go attack a bank. You want to go attack, like, a McDonald's because they keep people in poverty wages and then try and tell all the coworkers to support each other in the establishment. It's wonderful that the workers are trying to support each other by donating to each other, but the corporation shouldn't be the one telling them to do that.
I do have a question, though. How do you feel about when people, like, bash, into like small businesses that are not like corporate businesses, independent businesses?
I don't necessarily agree with that. I mean, for me, I don't condemn people's actions. Like, because for me, like, on one hand,
they're
I'm like,
free.
You know, I on one hand, I want to be like, I'm understanding that there's a certain amount of rage. Is everything okay?
Yeah, just somebody didn't want to get into the conversation on camera.
We had
so
to
there's a certain amount of rage involved in some of these actions, and yeah, they can be co-opted by people trying to make an organization look bad. But at the same time, like, the reason that I don't necessarily agree with some of it is specifically because some of the small businesses are part of the community. They work for themselves. They hire people in the community, and they do public and they
Woo!
Do good.
It was so exciting when somebody's
being released. I don't even know if this person's being released.
All right, so we're gonna play the one more thing for them. Here we go.
So, yeah, but as far as small businesses goes, it really just depends on the business. Like, for example, there was a business a couple years ago that got smashed up, and a lot of people were cheering about it. And I was like, you know, they're like, oh well, they serve the bourgeoisie and they serve like the ruling class. I was like, that business is a nonprofit and they take a lot of people who don't have any experience in the culinary field and give them a job, and most of their profits went to charity for homeless LGBTQ youth. So I was like, you know what, on one hand I can understand because of the location, but on the other hand you got to look at what they're doing as a whole.
Yeah, they're not like if they're a corporate business, like a big chain. I understand.
So like
that.
It's kind of like Robin, because at that point I was like, you know, they're kind of like Robin Hooding at one point, because they've got like they're in this rich neighborhood taking all these people's money, and yeah, they're providing these people a service, but they're taking all that money and they're giving it to like homeless youth, they're giving it to people who need a job, they're giving these people a resume to go work somewhere else.
Mm.
Like, so I kind of try and look at things as a totality rather than taking like this reaction.
It's more complicated.
It's almost always more complicated.
And that's a conversation I wish we were having on a larger scale, because I mean, I feel like there's this whole thing right now where there's like people like violence tactic versus non-violence tactic. That's not what's going on.
The tactic has to serve the goal.
There's a larger conversation to be had, and I hear a lot of like protest shaming about like people marching in the march today, and I feel a little bit like conflicted. I'm like, yes, a lot of these people.
Woo!
More people are getting released. Yay!
All right, so let's see. Okay, the next interview with our lovely, lovely medic is I believe it's a 12-minute interview. No, it's okay. We can finish it. It's three.
Some other people, because they're like.
So we're talking about how the march is excluding sex workers from their demands.
So, one of the questions I had asked other people about, because they were like, oh, well, we don't understand why some people are upset about this march. I was like, well, initially they weren't really accepting critique from communities of color and activists that have been doing this a really long time in underprivileged communities and vulnerable communities and minority communities. They just were not accepting like critique well.
Just very reminiscent of like suffragette type stuff.
Yeah, well, it's that, but also if you think about it, 43% of white women voted for Donald Trump. That same like
internalized sexism.
Yeah, that same demographic. If you think about it, 43% is probably also the people who put the march together and put all these organizations together, and they kind of like abandoned. Lesser heard voices.
Yes. But then they got it together a little bit.
One of the other things that had happened was that they dropped sex worker rights and autonomy off of their platform. So I don't know if they added it back again, but that was one of the things that really upset me, because for the longest time, people are told that they have no right to decide what to do with their own bodies, and that, oh, we're going to help you. We're saving you from the sex trade. And I was like, well, how about giving people the right to decide whether or not they want to do this and whether or not they can do this? That's their right. Saying that you're saving them, what are you saving them from? You're sending them to prison and making them their lives worse. So, and it's frustrating to see a lot of the marchers not really see that, and it's also frustrating on the other side of the coin to hear people condemning the marchers.
Because I think we do need more people to be doing this kind of work, or nothing's going to happen.
So I mean,
we can't just be this small little like group.
Yeah,
this group.
We need to grow.
People.
without sacrificing our ideals. And our,
exactly, and then it gets complicated.
And it gets more complicated because everyone wants to call you like a purist or you're stuck in...
Excuse me, I'm an anarcho-matriarchal communist.
So everyone wants to talk about purity. I'm like, you need a certain amount of purity in order to like hold on to your ideals, because when you start compromising everything, you turn to like, you know, Hillary Clinton and like all those people who you know are centrist.
Who I voted for because I felt I had no choice, honestly.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the thing. Like, I don't condemn people for voting for the way they felt they had to vote in terms of like voting for Hillary Clinton. I don't necessarily like hearing everyone tell everyone like, oh, you can't. You voted for Jill Stein. Oh, you voted for Bernie Sanders. Oh, you voted for giant fucking meteor 2017. Like, oh, you're the reason that this person got elected. I'm like, no, they're not the reason that Trump got elected. The reason that Trump got elected was because of one, Hillary and the DNC ran a terrible campaign. On top of that, they spent their time insulting like third party voters and Bernie voters.
And Trump voters.
So they might
have gone to her side if she didn't call them.
They kind of alienated themselves. And on top of that, they just sat there and was like, you know what, we got this in the bag.
Yeah.
So it was a combination of all those things, and then suddenly they're like, oh, we're surprised that Trump won. I'm like, yeah, all right. I don't know why you're surprised, but it is what it is.
All right. So do you feel? I think this has been a great interview.
All right. So that was one of my favorite interviews I had. I had some interviews with people at the Women's March that were somewhat moderate in their communication. In my opinion. So now, I am not super eloquent when it comes to describing why I don't think that nonviolent rhetoric is always the best way to go. I think that, you know, nonviolence has its place, and I think that diversity of tactics are awesome. But we're going to call in somebody named Anthony, and they are more educated on the topic than I am.
Hello, how are you?
Hello, Anthony. Thank you so much for being on the show here. So, you know, I'm talking a little bit about a lot of different things that, you know, that the discussion that's been going on the internet and society right now about people want to be like, nonviolence. And I know you have some opinions on this.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of perspective as to what constitutes violence, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what constitutes nonviolence. Nonviolence, we don't, as society, we don't have monopoly over the language of what defines nonviolence or violence. The state defines what constitutes violence and what constitutes nonviolence. You know, we often as society like to reward or undermine other forms of violence, but often out of bias, define violence or characterize certain people as violent. Like we often, for example, you know, give police, you know, the option or pass that they're not violent because it's their occupation. They call it as an occupation because it's their duty to protect the country.
Mm-hmm.
But the moment some, you know, you cannot make that same analogy when things like Akai Gurley, Chantel Davis, and countless more Black and brown people are constantly targeted by the police. But the moment they start defending themselves because they're constantly being harassed through, you know, state violence, all of a sudden we notion them as violent. People like to have to talk this conversation about like, okay, property destruction is violent. First of all, property destruction, it does not count as violence. Unfortunately, we live in a society that values property over people.
Okay.
And prioritizing property over people is prioritizing capital principle, capitalism. This country, its material component, its whole entire material component, right? If you're logicalizing property destruction of the top 1%, right?
Yeah.
That, you know, who built their whole economic gain through violence against indigenous Black and brown people, you are maintaining your own white ignorance in play. People of color, Black, trans, queer, should not be entertaining white ignorance. They should be entertaining resistance and really downplaying really white ignorance, you know, white ignorance and white fragility. Because at the end of the day, if your understanding of violence is only limited to those people who are resisting, and you're not holding the state accountable for the violent tendency that they use to build this country, then you have to question what kind of activism you stand. And this is the problem between those who happen to be of privilege. They have the luxury to speak about pacifism in a way of life. When you don't have targets in the form of racism, sexism, patriarchy, and all of forms of things that this country is built on, you can luxuriate and have the luxury to live in a pacifist way of living. But Black and Brown Indigenous people cannot have that luxury, even if they try to, because the system acknowledged them as property and a commodity to provide labor. Hence, the violence it needs to maintain the structure. But you rarely see people talk about that. But they will talk about asserting forms of resistance. They're going to tell people that there is a proper way to create a movement. Well, let's be real here. If nonviolence, pacifism, or civil resistance have worked, why the fuck are we still fighting today?
Yeah, I can't even believe that anti-Semitism has come up as a topic again.
Yeah.
We're going backwards.
And I'm just going to say this too. The fact that you know, people like to quote Martin Luther King, because I know.
Thank you for going there. Thank you. Yeah, I have to say.
A lot of people like to quote Martin Luther King and Gandhi. The people that likes to quote Martin Luther King and Gandhi has a very lack of understanding of what the movement really was. Because in reality, grant Martin Luther speak about nonviolent rhetoric, but he also spoke about prioritizing goals over tactics and also supporting our other forms of resistance that is not limited to just nonviolent rhetoric. Hence the relationship with Black Panther community. Hence the relationship with Malcolm X. These people work together. It's a yin-yang effect. For you to simply there and said you're going to strip historical facts to justify your own morality, to galvanize people in a nonviolent rhetoric that only benefit you as a first-class citizen, that may not work for marginalized community who does not reason them as people, is problematic. As a person who happened to be of privilege, yes, you might be able to negotiate yourself into the state's reality. But civil rights was never civil. It was fought for. A lot of people were criminalized. A lot of people were marginalized. A lot of people, the people that were sitting on the tables and the counters, you don't think they experienced violence? But you don't want to talk about that. But what you want to talk about is tone policing people who have chosen how to deal with the circumstances of violence. It is a form of privilege to speak about we have to be nonviolent. You have to be nonviolent. And I said, you can choose to be nonviolent because you have the luxury to.
Yeah, some and it's also can. That weird gradual thing people want to talk about all the time. It's like, people need to read about history? Because like in the women's suffragette movement, all the Black women were told to march in the back or that it wasn't their moment. They would have to wait.
It was never inclusive. Never. Let's be real. If we want to talk about creating change in society, we have to deconstruct how we organize, right? We have to really deconstruct the language. You know, if you think it's appropriate to surrender, you know, I'm going to give you one quote, right? Which is a really good, it came from Ramona Africa, from a seminar that she did here in New York City, right? Let me read you something. She said in the seminar was that, maybe I'm going to have to find it later, but like, I'll go back to that quote, but like my thoughts on nonviolent, nobody's saying that nonviolent is, you know, problematic. I mean, it has its problematic qualms, right? The problem that I have is that people built their activism with a notion of nonviolent rhetoric only in charge. That seems to be the foundational of every movement. But the reality of it is that denounces diversity of tactic. Diversity and tactic does not go with, oh, let's do 101 ways to do, to create diversity. Sherlock, people don't even the people that like to talk about nonviolent theory don't even understand what nonviolent theory is. Because if you think burning an American flag is violent and it's not protected under First Amendment right, then you really have a lack of understanding what it defines violence. And that's the problem. That's usually like Asada Shakur once said, nobody in the world, nobody in history has ever gotten their freedom by appealing to the moral sense of people who were oppressing them. It is not our duty to humor people who benefit out of the state. It's not my duty as a person of color, queer, or any marginalized people to humor privilege and white fragility in play. You know, Jane Elliott said, the problem in this country is not only white supremacy, but white ignorance. People have to start learning that your understanding of movement building is limited to only your understanding from an academic sense. Because to be honest with you, the only people that has been fighting this country endlessly are marginalized Black and Brown and people of color and women. They can, to that intersects their issue to this day. Some of these people don't have passing privilege, and the only way they can survive is to self-defend. You know, and often it's even hard to have a conversation about self-defense because often society who happen to be of privilege and have the luxury to talk about nonviolent rhetoric, right? Because living in a pacifist lifestyle is a form of privilege because nobody in a time of the day can bother the shit out of you. Nobody has the time of the day trying to make you feel like you're less than. So yeah, you can live your life like that, but not all people can. But in the reality of it all is that Black and Brown and Indigenous people haven't. So the problem with, white folks who constantly propagate nonviolent rhetoric is that they have a lack of understanding how that functions. They often take that part and don't understand that the other part is necessary. That's when you can start talking about decentralized movement that focuses on goals and prioritize goals over tactics in a diverse way. You cannot simply say in there, okay, this is how it's been worked. Because to be honest with you, the reason why Martin Luther King was able to make that speech in the stairs in DC is because radical group had said, and you can do this research on your own, and if you're willing to learn, anybody listening, is that radical group had said, we will burn this city down if you don't let this man speak. It works hand in hand. Nonviolent rhetoric does not guarantee you nonviolent situation. It doesn't. And this is the thing that people don't understand. They want to sit there and have a conversation about, nonviolent rhetoric works, nonviolent, but it does not guarantee nonviolent situation, though. Because at the end of the day, nonviolent rhetoric can also be a gaslighting effect. It's like a log throwing on a bonfire. Fascism.
It definitely is. A lot of these conversations remind me of like individual abusive relationships I've been in.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, fascism has no reservation of using any forms of violence by any means necessary to galvanize their goals in play. So how come, the thing that always humor me about people is that they operate in this mentality that the system is broken. The system is not broken, people. The system is functioning for what it's worth. Stop fixing the system that is not broken. Just because it's not accommodating to your privilege, to many people that's been living, the people, marginalized people, many marginalized people have acknowledged that the system has not provided any services to us at all, right? So for people to simply sit there and say, oh, let's fix the system by reform and we need to be nonviolent, you're assuming that all of the people in society in this country can somehow gain their liberties through proper negotiation. It hasn't. It hasn't been. It hasn't at all.
It's been going on forever.
The fact that we're still now fighting for women's rights. No women should have to fight for their liberties in a system that commoditized them. No Black or Brown or Indigenous people should have to be fighting for liberties in a system that speak about freedom. There's no such thing as freedom. And I will say this, right? For people to like the word one, In a reality outside capitalist system, in the system that we currently have, we might be able to become one. But in this system, we are not one. We're born into a society that told that certain people is less than over the other. And those people who likes to tone police activist spaces has to really reflect within themselves is that, are you galvanizing yourself and your community for your own preservation or for under the expense of others? Because clearly most of you, most of people who actively fight this system will say that you're not doing it for us. You're doing it for yourself. Because at the end of the day, a lot of people said, people who like to talk about nonviolent divides us, like to talk about, provoking violence. You're assuming that the system has a conscience. The fact that you think that you can negotiate your way in a system with such a win, liberties and all, through nonviolence and through reform, is assuming that the system has a conscience that has no interest in doing it for the people. The only reason why they're doing it for you is because it has to come down back to them, whether if it's capital gain or whatever interest they have in mind. So let's have this conversation about what's going to happen in Standing Rock. So you're going to tell people in Standing Rock to be nonviolent and they're about to experience a severe violence because they prioritize building that pipeline. But yet you don't want to have a conversation about a pipeline that's being built under a reservation that belongs to those people. And I'm going to say this also. People who like to talk about nonviolent rhetoric, and it's going to rub people the wrong way, and I don't give a shit. I am an unapologetic person of color who happens to be queer, and I'm not here to entertain whatsoever white fragility. Goodbye, good. White fragility.
Good.
Right. What I'm going to say is that it must be nice to sit around at home to live a life that many of us will never achieve. It must be nice to able to sit at home and roll your eyes right now and think that this is not reality to us.
Wait, you should say that again just because it kind of faded out on this thing. Sorry.
I said it must be nice to live a life and a life that many of us are not able to live in privilege. And it's also nice to live a life that, that many of us will never achieve. You can roll your eyes over and over again and you don't think this is actually reality. The fact that you are comfortable within the vicinity of your own activism and you're not willing to be uncomfortable, hence, activism is supposed to be uncomfortable experience because it's not building a movement for yourself. You're building movement for others that are often marginalized by people. So if you're not actively feeling uncomfortable about what you need to do and understanding what really resistance is, and it's not limited to just nonviolent rhetoric. They go hand in hand as a whole. You can't deconstruct that and take away the rest of the historical facts, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's problematic. You are to me, if you're going to say, oh, I'm nonviolent. Okay. I always ask people when they say I'm nonviolent, how much taxes do you pay a year? And you know what the people respond to me like, why does it matter? Because you can choose to be nonviolent today, but the rest out of the year, you're financing bombing Palestine. That makes you violent.
Yeah, if you pay property taxes or you buy a lot of things, the cops are paid through property tax and sales tax. So they're paid by the rich.
You can try to logicalize how nonviolent you are, boo-boo, but the rest of here, you are violent as fuck, because while you're not doing the deed, you are financing violence. So you're no different than the people that you talk shit about. The only difference is that these people choose resistance by any means necessary to survive.
And
they're not doing it to maintain their living status, their status or their privilege in line. That is violence. The fact that you can sit there and say, I'm going to buy shit made in China and be okay with the type of labor force that was used to make your fucking clothes, that is a form of violence. The fact that you think you can pay taxes and allow taxes to be stripped out of your pay to bomb Palestine, that is a form of violence. So you can't play morality card on me, hon. You can't play the morality card on me, because while you can throw that to people who try to resist against the oppressive nature of this capitalist system, you're maintaining it by remaining silent, by remaining nonviolent. That's your stand.
And
because as a privileged person who speak about nonviolence, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's white people listening to this right now, I recommend if you're starting to feel angry and defensive to really listen to it and allow yourself to be fucking uncomfortable.
You're supposed to be angry. You're supposed to be offensive.
Wait, sorry.
You're supposed to be uncomfortable. And I don't give a shit. It's not my job. It's not any person of color's job to educate you how to assert your alliance to marginalized community. It is your job to elevate community that are often marginalized and allow them to create the space. You don't tokenize them, you don't tokenize their issue and create a movement. It is not yours to create. It is yours to support and stand by them. This is the truth. This is the reality, and this is the tea. While you have the luxury to walk away from this situation because you can choose to be political, some of us were born into a society that being political is not a choice, it's a way of life. The moment people walk outside those doors, every day is a political fight. Every day is a political fight. You can fucking, I know most of y'all are rolling your motherfucking eyes right now. You can roll the motherfucking eyes right now. But the fact that you have the luxury and have the audacity to talk about that their resistance is only limited to just nonviolent and negotiating themselves into the state is a form of act of violence. You are a criminal to my eyes. Because if you acknowledge that what's happening to Black and brown people in this community, and you choose to lean away because you want to hang on your morality in place and self-preservation, you are a criminal.
So I got to say, Anthony, this is amazing. I wish I could let you talk for the next 5 hours, but I got 15 minutes left on this show. So I gotta get back to the show. I gotta get back to playing some of the other things I was playing. But I want to say thank you so much for talking about all this stuff. I really hope people who are listening to this, like, if you want to get angry and be angry at the injustices of all of this, of everything, please do. But if you're gonna be angry because you feel targeted because you're white or whatever, get over yourselves.
No. I'm gonna say one thing. This. So
yeah, please.
If you want to be angry to the system that is holding people in captive or punishing them because they're marginalized. Don't be angry to the people who are figuring out how to create a movement to save their community by any means necessary.
Yes, because exactly. I agree.
There's a people like that we call in our community who justify the violence of the state. It's a coon. You're a coon if you justify the violence of the state.
And that's how I feel about white women who voted for Trump. I call them Wendy's. They're women who like got into the boys' club, but they think they've won. You know, like Wendy from Peter Pan.
Because they don't want to take down the state. They don't want to take down the state. They just want to move the furniture around to make it uncomfortable. And that's the truth. Another topic.
Wait, what were you going to say? I'm sorry. What were you going to say? You were going to say one more thing, right?
No, if they truly want to acknowledge that the system is problematic, they wouldn't be standing there having conversation with the police. They wouldn't be surrendering people who are doing radical actions to the police. They wouldn't be talking about BFFing the police or negotiating them in the state. You should be actively building away from the system that marginalized your community if you call yourself an ally. And fuck your PIN. Fuck your safety PIN.
I want to say thank you so much for being here, Anthony. This is amazing, and I hope the people listening like fucking appreciate to hear what the fuck you got to say. All right, have a great day, and bye bye. All right, so I gotta say, Anthony says some fucking brilliant stuff and says it way more eloquently than I can, because I'm just like, nonviolent rhetoric can be victim blaming, but he speaks it so much better than I do. I can't even do that. In my opinion, but I want to say thank you so much for listening to What Would Save the World. My name is Tuke Edelo. I'm on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm here every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. I'm probably going to do a part two when I talk about everything that went on down there, because Anthony gave an amazing, amazing interview, and to cut them off would have just, there would have been no good reason to do that, to cut them off earlier than I did. And I wish I could have let them go on way longer. But, okay, so here's a little interview I did with some girls where we talked about some trans feminism. Here we go.
Okay, I don't care if you do. Hi, so thank you for being interviewed for What Would Save the World. I'm interested, do you want to say your names? Or you don't have to if you don't want to. Or you can just be interviewed.
Yeah, we can just be interviewed.
Okay,
yeah, sure.
So I want to know, so why are you here today? Obviously, but like, what's your personal reason for being here today?
To protect and save our womanhood and just like femininity and like in general, and like not even just femininity, but like intersectionality and like everything.
Yeah.
And like, and just like to help and like support everyone, because a lot of people are at risk.
To protect right my now. Immigrant roommates.
Yeah.
And like friends.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the fact that like, this has been continuing, sort of minimizing people down to genitalia? How do you feel about that? I don't know.
You mean like...
No, so the reason why I interviewed you guys is because I walk by and I saw misogyny is for dicks, and in my head, I immediately go, yeah, misogyny is for fucking dicks. But then I think, I find it really weird, even as someone who has a pussy painted on my forehead, that, like... I don't know, I get concerned in how trans feminism is going to be included in this march. So, this is not me coming over to be like, what do you do? This is me being like, let's have a discussion about this. What do you think about that? About like trans feminism, trans people maybe feeling alienated from this march?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a huge problem, especially with white feminism.
Oh, yeah.
But I think, I mean, for me, my own personal take on feminism is just equality of all genders, like not just the gender binary. That's why I sort of like... tried with my poster to make it less about like pussy. I don't know, just for me.
What does your sign say?
It's like a Carrie Chapman Catt quote, like an early suffragette. I think it's just sort of.
It says to the wrongs that need resistance, to the rights that need assistance, to the future in the distance. Give yourselves, Carrie Chapman Catt.
Yeah. Awesome. So I think that sort of encompasses sort of all the issues why I'm here today, not just about like feminism, but sort of like, you know, everything, just the culmination of. The shit show.
That's great. Also, thank you. So, I really appreciate that. Do you want to say anything?
And that's really great, and everything that we had that these young girls knew about trans feminism. But I think it's so weird to me that the suffragettes were sort of like had white supremacy things. Like, man, people don't understand how much white people have like co-opted movements very much from more marginalized people. But anyway, thank you so much for listening to What Would Save the World. If you got a bone to pick with me, or you agree with me, or whatever, you can find me on Twitter, 2KEDALOW. That's like the symbol 2. If you ever want to be on the show, email me at tuok@radiofreebrooklyn.com. I would love to have you on the show, even if you completely disagree with me. You know, maybe we'll get in a fight, and that's great. Maybe we'll be best friends. We'll see what happens. But thank you for listening to What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn. And on January 20th, on the inauguration day, there's a bunch of speakers in McPherson Park where Occupy was, and this is a reverend's speech. I can't remember his name, but it was fantastic. I'm going to play it for you right now. Here we go.
Trumpism. And I looked down Pennsylvania Avenue, and that's what I saw was protester after protester after protester after protester. God bless the protesters. But I'm going to tell you one thing. Today, we're going to cease using the word protesters. Because we're going to be resistors.
Yes!
Resistors of evil. Resistance of division. Resistors of racism. Resistors of white supremacy. Resistor of misogynism. Resistors of folks who are against the LGBTQ community. Yes! We're going to stand together and be resistors and stand up for justice. Stand up against injustice. Because really the future, I don't care what's going on today, the future is in our hands. The future is up to our discipline. The future is up to our commitment to stand up and not be quiet, to resist day in and day out. But I got news. We can't just come out on January 20th and January 21st. But we need to be out day after day, week after week, month after month, building the resistance, because that is what's going to turn this situation around, is that we build the resistance and refuse to be ruled by illegitimate rulers, refuse to be ruled by illegitimate government, refuse to recognize even an illegitimate government. Folks kept saying to me, they said, well, why are you going out there to protest? He's already been elected, and there's nothing you can do to keep him from being sworn in as president. Well, first of all, to make that statement, you missed the point. You missed the point of what resistance is all about. You know, the reality is, we cussed up out because we've heard the words, we've heard the language, we've seen the attitude, and I don't need to sit and be patient and wait to see what these fools are going to do. They already told me what they're going to do. When somebody says, I'm going to kill you, is your response, well, I'm going to wait to see what you're going to do? That's what's just happened. The person has said that they're going to remove immigrants from the community. They're going to deal with Muslims that they know are Mexicans as rapists. And there goes my African-American there, and Black Lives Matter as a terrorist organization. They have already said it. And so it's up to us now to begin to build the resistance to take these folks on, and take them on hard, and to take them on without ceasing, to take them on every single day of the week.
Yes!
Our role is a role of revolution. Of revolution. And revolution simply means you turn things around. Revolution. It's up to us to turn things around. They say, oh, that's Reverend Hagler. No, call me Revolutionary Hagler. Call my church Revolutionary Church. Call my synagogue Revolutionary Synagogue. Call my mosque Revolutionary Mosque. Call my place where I gather with my friends a revolutionary gathering place. Because we need to mark ourselves not only as resistors, but revolutionaries that dare to change the system, to challenge it, to deal with it, to turn it around so that it becomes a place of inclusion and not exclusion.
And then he says some ridiculously awesome shit.
Are you ready to resist?
Yeah!
Are you ready to resist?
Yeah!
Are you ready to resist?
Yeah!